AIG's surprising 180.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. The board of the bailed-out insurance giant AIG is set to meet today, and board members will be considering whether the company should join a $25 billion shareholder lawsuit against the U.S. government, the very same government that saved AIG during the financial crisis. The lawsuit claims shareholders didn't receive adequate compensation when the federal government stepped in to rescue the firm. Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
In one corner, AIG's former chief, Hank Greenberg, who's still a major stockholder, insists the company got a raw deal and wants the firm to join his lawsuit against the government. And Uncle Sam's attorneys will be presenting their case for why the company shouldn't sue.
It really is very much like a court proceeding where the AIG board will be the arbiter of this dispute.
Jacob Frankel is a corporate law attorney and former federal prosecutor. He points out AIG's directors have a legal duty to consider significant shareholder requests like this. And Columbia University law professor John Coffey says the board could be looking to head off further legal action against them by demonstrating they've given Greenberg due consideration.
That would mean that they would be immune from liability if Greenberg subsequently sued them for not suing the U.S. government.
Could Greenberg really turn on the company he led into a crisis? Coffey points out, take a look at what he's already done.
It takes a lot of gall to sue the country that bailed you out when you went into bankruptcy because of your own basic recklessness.
He calls it pure chutzpah. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
The latest airline fare hike seems to have fizzled. United raised prices last week and Delta followed suit, but both airlines rescinded the increase after a competitor refused to play along. Kate Davidson reports.
When an airline wants to raise prices, it can't just sit down and confer with the competition.
The danger is that it's against the law.
Charlie Lioka is director of the Consumer Travel Alliance.
Executives will go to jail, so they're not interested in that.
Instead, an airline floats a trial balloon, like United did last week. It raised fares by $2 here, $5 there. Then it watched to see who matched them. Rick Sini is CEO of FareCompare.com.
The big stick in the mud for raising prices historically has been Southwest Airlines. If they don't come along with the hike, typically the hike fails.
If airfare pricing is like a giant game of chicken, Southwest has an advantage as the biggest domestic bird. Rick Sini says the airlines are so competitive, a fare difference of a dollar can land a carrier on page 25 of your search results. And no airline wants to be on page 25. So rest in peace, 2013 fare hike number one. In New York, I'm Kate Davidson for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mostly higher in global trading this morning, up 0.5% in Hong Kong, 0.3% higher right now in London. Another Boeing 787 Dreamliner flight has been canceled after Monday's onboard fire in Boston. No one was injured in that fire, of course. This time, a Japan Airlines flight was canceled due to brake problems. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow dropped 55 points to close at 13,328.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
If you've gotten your first paycheck of the year, you may have noticed it's a bit smaller than it used to be, thanks to the expiration of the payroll tax cut last week. The fiscal cliff deal is one economic story that will impact just about every one of us. But Marketplace's senior producer of personal finance, Patty Hirsch, says it is not the economic story that'll have the biggest impact on our wallets this year. Patty joins us now for our Money Matters segment. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Well, so Patty, as we start this year of 2013, how is it different from your vantage point looking at consumer finance than where we were a year ago in 2012?
Well, I think the biggest difference is in the housing market. You know, a year ago, we weren't seeing these big private equity funds and hedge funds and investors piling into the market in order to buy housing, not to flip it, but to rent it. Hmm. And I think what that's done is it's driven up prices, it's pushed people out of the market before they can even get in, and it's in danger of turning us into a nation of renters.
And traditionally, obviously, a home has been the biggest asset that any individual American owns, right?
That's right. And that's really starting to change. We're starting to see the numbers really gap down as people sort of move into renting and out of home ownership.
And so what are the implications of this?
Well, there are good things and there are bad things, right? On the upside, it means that you don't have to borrow so much as an individual person. It means there's less leverage in the system, and that's a good thing. The second thing is that it means that we're more flexible as a workforce. I mean, if you own a home in Buffalo and you get a job in Colorado, it's a nightmare. You've got to sell your home and move and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
If you're renting, it means you're much more flexible. It's much more easy to move. And so the more people that we have renting in the society, it means the more flexible we are as a workforce and more flexible we are as an economy.
All right. So those are some upsides. What about the downsides? I imagine there are downsides.
Well, of course. And the big downside that everybody talks about really is damage to neighborhoods. I mean, the truism has been that if people own a home, that means their roots are deeper in a community. It means they're less likely to move and a neighborhood is more stable. If you have a neighborhood full of renters, they can just up and move at any time. And so you have much less stability in a neighborhood. And that causes a lot of people concern. The second thing is that, you know, if you're renting, it means you're not getting any equity, right? You're paying money. It disappears. There's no equity there. When you own a home and you're paying money into it, the hope is that eventually you'll get some kind of a return on that. So if we become renters as opposed to homeowners, it means there's much less stability there in terms of our investment. And the third thing, of course, is that, you know, homes used to be the thing that we all used to save for. So if we don't own homes anymore, if we're not sort of required to pay a mortgage every month, what are we going to do with that money? You know, how are we going to save that money? Where are we going to put our savings? Are we going to even have the discipline to save and invest in the future? That's a big question for the economy, I think.
Well, I imagine that there'll be plenty of bills to be paid for college education, maybe even preschool these days in some places.
In Los Angeles, Manhattan, certainly.
Marketplace Senior Producer of Personal Finance, Patty Hirsch, thanks so much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Jeremy.
And finally, Hasbro is retiring one of the Monopoly pieces next month and replacing it with a new token. Yes, according to USA Today, either the race car, the iron, the Scotty dog, the wheelbarrow, the boot, the top hat, the thimble, or the battleship will be no more. Hasbro wants to replace one of the pieces to stay fresh. So which piece do you think should go? You can vote now on our APM Marketplace Facebook page, and right now the thimble is winning. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.